welcome back to another special edition of Crash, Are You Ready? Today we have a very distinguished guest, backed by popular demand, Eustace Mullins, the author of The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, which in my opinion is head and shoulders above the other reserve publications, which might be more popular, but really don't get the facts as well as this book does. Eustace, welcome back to the program. All right, Eustace, can you hear us right now?
Pardon?
Oh, you're online? Okay. Welcome back to our program. And
I switched to the other phone. I have smaller phone that doesn't work very well.
I can hear you okay on the phone.
Oh yeah, this is a good phone.
Okay. All right, excellent. I was just looking at your excellent book, The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, in which you detail interest not only how the Federal Reserve was formed, but how they've gotten us into war after war. Specifically, there's a chapter on World War I. So what Bush has been doing with getting us into wars with Iraq at the behest of the international bankers is nothing new. Ever since the Federal Reserve Act was passed in 1913, they've been setting about getting us into wars. Could you tell our listening audience exactly what the international bankers did to sucker us into World War One?
Well, they didn't really sucker us into World War One. But they're willing to pay for it with
uh-huh.
that money, of course.
Okay.
And we have been almost continuously in war since the Federal Reserve Act was passed in December 1913. So you'd think the people would finally wake up. Now, I officially call the Federal Reserve Bank the Federal Reserve War Party, because that's all. It is not a Federal Reserve Bank. It's a war party.
Okay, some of the literature I've read at the time, the international banking families have massive control, or if it's blocks of stock, they have the dominant shares of stock of the major news media. And what I was referring to when I said sucker since World War One, there was a massive propaganda campaign, and the what I've read about what the press was saying at the time before we entered the war, it was eerily similar to the bogus charges that were being made about Iraq before with the mass media cranking up and just either accepting the administration's official line, really questioning it, or manufacturing, just making things up. There was an eerie similarity between the disinformation that led up to the attack on Iraq and the disinformation which the mass media was promulgating among the American public, leading us into World War One. And in both cases, the corporate press, as opposed to the free press, was ultimately, if you look at your excellent book and you follow the interlocking directorates up the ladder, they come to the same banking families.
Oh, they always do. It's the same principal characters, and they're worldwide, and they're united, and so they can go into any country.
All right. Now, exactly who were the principal personalities? In other words, who were the Paul Wolfel?
Well, the Federal Reserve plan was
allowed
by Paul Warburg, who's an employee of the Rothschild Bank in Europe. And Paul Warburg became known as the author of the Federal Reserve.
All right. And how did the funding occur to get America to enter the war in the First World War? What were the manipulations behind the scenes that led up to our entry into that war?
Well, it was very fortuitous event. Germany and Britain were at war, and Britain was constantly shipping munitions back and forth over around Europe. And so they loaded a ship, the Lusitania, with 40,000 tons of munitions, and then notified the Germans just where it would be sailing on a certain date. And so the Germans obligingly sunk the Lusitania, and there was some loss of American life. And so Woodrow Wilson, an employee of the National City Bank of New York, promptly voted us into the war.
I believe I read somewhere that something like 85% of the American public, before the massive propaganda campaigns began by the corporate press to get us into that war, something like 85% of the people were opposed to entering the European wars. This is, you know, before we got into World War I.
Well, they always are. They were all opposed to entering the Iraq war. The people always 80% opposed to war because they know that their sons are going to get killed.
Well, they were also, they had paid attention to the founders of our country, like George Washington, who in his farewell address said, do not get involved in the entanglements of wars in Europe.
Well, foreign entanglements, that's what he said. And that's absolutely true. Because this country was young and needed to develop and had no business getting involved in foreign entanglements.
Well, we have a situation apparently where the American people, the vast majority of the American people, have not learned the lessons of what has happened in Iraq. Apparently, they're using the same nuclear weapons argument that if we don't attack Iran now, it's the same thing they said. Of course, then Iraq had no nuclear weapons, and of course, neither does Iran. But the interesting thing is, after it has been documented that the reasons we went into Iraq were bogus, they're using exactly the same arguments about Iran, and the American people didn't learn a thing from it, or the vast majority of them didn't learn anything from the previous set of lies. Back after the break. All right, we're back with our special guest, Eustace Mullins, the author of The Secrets of the Federal Reserve. Eustace, there is another chapter in your book about the Great Depression. What connection did the international bankers have, or the Federal Reserve Bank have, with engineering the Great Depression?
Well, the international bankers are really the central bankers. A central bank is a conglomerate of banks that can operate all over the world. So what happened in 1928, the gold dealers, the international gold dealers, the Warburgs and Rothschilds, they wanted to get Great Britain back on the gold standard. And so the United States embarked on a massive financial campaign to help Great Britain get back on the gold standard. This was revealed in the congressional investigations of the crash of 29, but never read the papers. And my book is the only one that revealed it. And so they deliberately manipulated the crash of 29. The country was prosperous, and there was no reason for a depression. But the bankers, with their worldwide operations, could operate anywhere in the world. So they went into Wall Street and raised the short-term loan, and people couldn't meet their payments, and so that caused a crash.
All right. Now, this is, we have in the series of programs we've had here, I've I've said many, many times, prior to 1933, we had in this country, we had gold certificates, we had silver certificates, we had gold coin, we had silver coin, and there are so many people out there that are saying, well, if we just had something, quote-unquote, backing up the money supply, that all of our financial problems would be over. And then I'll ask them the question, did having gold coinage, gold certificates, silver certificates prior to 1933, did any of that prevent the crash of 1929? Of course it did not. Did any of those things prevent the depression that followed with more than 5,000 bank failures? Of course it didn't. Now, in your book here, there's a perfect example, and I've said repeatedly that international bankers can bankrupt you on a gold standard. They can bankrupt a country on a gold standard just as easily as they can on a non-gold standard. Now, here in your book is yet another proof, because it says right here in under the chapter of the Great Depression, and on page 143, the League of Nations had achieved its goal of getting the nations of Europe back on the gold standard by 1928, but three-fourths of the world's gold was in France and the United States. The problem was how to get the gold to currency, which needed it as a basis for money and credit. The answer was action by the Federal Reserve System. Of course, as they were effecting the transfer of gold out of this country and over into Europe, they were creating the basis for a depression over here. So here's a perfect example. It says in your book on page 144, following the secret meeting of the Federal Reserve Board and the heads of the foreign central banks in 1927, the Federal Reserve banks in a few months doubled. Exportation of $500 million in gold that year. The system's market activities forced the rates of call money down on the stock exchange and forced gold out of the country. Foreigners also took this opportunity to purchase heavily in government securities because of the low call money rate. Quote, the agreement between the Bank of England and the Washington Federal Reserve authorities many months ago was that we would force the export of $725 million of gold by reducing the bank rates here, thus helping the stabilization of France and Europe and putting France on a gold basis. And I might add, thus engineering the depression in this country. So there's a perfect example in your book. It's documented how the international bankers created the depression by moving or causing gold to be moved out of this country.
It is a perfect example. And it shows the manipulation of international gold movements, but an essential part of the central bank operations it was.
So, in other words, it appears that the vast majority of the American people have not learned a thing from what happened in the money manipulations to create the Great Depression over here. It's like they never have learned a lesson that is demonstrated here in your book. Here it is in black and white. This is a perfect example of how the international bankers created depression on a gold standard simply by manipulating the call rates and manipulating the movement of the gold to another. Well, your book is one of the only ones that documents this. I mean, there are many books which are out there which are, you know, possibly more popular, but they have some facts about, like, who the people were that met in Jekyll Island and how they got over to train.
Well, that's all out of my book. See, I wrote my book in 1953, and it's been circulating for over 50 years, but the American people have never paid much attention to it.
Well, that's exactly, the thing is, there are other books out there which are much more widely read about the Federal Reserve. Now, some of them will have a lot of details about who the chief players were that met boarded a train in Hoboken, New Jersey, how they went down and met in secret in Jekyll Island, et cetera, et cetera. Well, in other words, there are many names and dates and faces and places, but when it comes down to the actual mechanism of how depressions are created, they have either a lot of disinformation or they don't even address the issue at all. It's astonishing. And at the same time, you have thousands of copies of these kind of books, which in my opinion, in many cases, help the international bankers by throwing up a smokescreen. If you have some facts and then you mix them in with some disinformation, it's much more difficult for the average person to disentangle that than it is if you just had 100% disinformation. And now with your book, you've got accurate facts. And a lot of people, I saw one of your books on the antiquarian book listings selling for more than $300, and yet your books are still in print and the public doesn't know how to get them. So after the break, we'll come back and I'd like for you to give your address where people can order your books. Back after the break, we'll use the small. All right, we're back with our distinguished guest, Eustace Mullins. Eustace, I notice now on page 162 of your book, you have the testimony before the House Banking and Currency Committee on June 24th, 1941, of Governor Mariner Eccles. And he says, money is created out of the right to issue credit money, quote unquote. Now, if you or I write a check and we don't have sufficient funds in our bank accounts to cover that check, they call that a crime and they call that check kiting. And yet here is an individual before the House Banking and Currency Committee openly admitting that the money that the Federal Reserve Bank creates is created as a bookkeeping entry out of nothing.
That's absolutely true. But the catch to it all is, if the Federal Reserve Act was passed to give Congress the authority to authorize this creating money out of nothing. Actually, it would be illegal because the Constitution reserves that right to Congress. But a central bank, first of all, is a bank which has the right of issue, which obtains the right to print money. A magic money machine. And that is what all of the fuss is about the Federal Reserve System. Because it is a scam. Essentially, it's actually a counterfeit money, but it's counterfeit money which is issued with the authority of the U.S. government. And the Federal Reserve money immediately becomes a full obligation of the U.S. government. And that's how they got it through Congress in 1913. Now, they got the bill through Congress because they had to offer a little enticement. And so what they did to persuade Congress to pass the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, they said the Federal Reserve will pay all of its profits into the U.S. Treasury. But they didn't tell anyone that they'd also put a clause in the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 which abolished the United States Treasury and said the United States Treasury is no longer the sole fiscal agent of the United States government. From now on, it's going to be the Federal Reserve Bank. In other words, a privately owned bank. And so nobody has ever read that sentence in the Federal Reserve System. And the congressmen voted for the Federal Reserve Act in 1913 because they said, we're going to give all our profits to the U.S. Treasury. Well, that sounded very patriotic. But what they did, the Federal Reserve kept all the profits, and they used it as a war fund. And we've been fighting these wars ever since because they're financing these wars with the profits of the privately owned Federal Reserve System.
Oh, okay,
I was going to give you my address that the people can order up-to-date copies of my Federal Reserve book directly from me at the Christian Retirement Home.
Now, what is the price of the book, The Secrets of the Federal Reserve?
It's $40 postpaid.
Okay. All right, so that includes the shipping then. And how
shipping
can our listeners get... What address should the listeners write to order your book?
Christian Retirement Home, 94 Mountain Vista.
Christian Retirement Fund.
A home, H-O-M-E.
No, I want to make sure we get this. Christian Retirement Fund.
Home.
Christian and
Retirement
then what is...
Home. 94.
What is the... I'm sorry, Houston.
It's a Christian Retirement Home.
Christian Retirement Home, okay. H-O-M-E.
Yeah.
And then
address,
what is...
It's 94 Mountain Vista Drive.
How do you spell that?
M-O-U-N-T-A-N, Vista, V-I-S-T-A, Drive, D-R. And it's apartment 101. Stewart's Draft, Virginia, 24477. And
okay, could you give that once again for us, Eustace? Could you give out that address once again for us,
yes.
Please?
The Christian Retirement Home, 94 Mountain Vista Drive, apartment 101, Stewart's Draft, Virginia. It's two words. Stewart's Draft, 24477.
Okay, let me make sure. Let me make sure I got this correct. You were breaking up a bit on the transmission there, but I've got Christian Retirement Home, and that's 94 Mountain Vista Drive, and that's apartment 101, and that...
two words, Stewart's Draft, Virginia.
How do you spell that?
Stewart is a lot of the... Scott's name is Stewart, S-T-U-A-R-T-S, and Draft is a, it's like draft beer, and then VA, Virginia, and the zip is 24477.
Okay, I've got, what I have here is Christian Retirement Home, and then 94 Mountain Vista Drive, apartment 101. And I, because you're breaking up on the air there, what is the city again, please?
Stewart's Draft. That's the Scott's name, Stewart. S-T-U-A-R-T-S. And that's second word is draft, which is like draft beer.
Okay.
And VA for Virginia.
Okay. Okay. Let me repeat this. S-T-U-A-R-T-S. And then another word. First word is Stewart's, and then the second word is draft, like draft beer, D-R-A-F-T?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. So Stewart's Draft, Virginia, 24477. So
there.
Okay. So Christian Retirement Home, 94 Mountain Vista Drive, apartment 101, Stewart's Draft, S-T-U-A-R-T-S, another word, second word, D-R-A-F-T, Virginia, 24477. Is that correct?
That's correct. And,
okay, great.
All right. And I'll autograph the books that people order from me here.
All right. Now, I have seen on, like, eBay and on books and so forth, I've seen your books that are unsigned and used going for hundreds of dollars. One of them was more than $300. So it's incredible that a lot of people don't even know that your books are still in print.
I don't know, because I've never advertised my book, and they've never been carried in bookstores.
Well, for those of you that want the truth, I would strongly urge our listeners to order Eustace Mullins' book. There's another book that you have. Of course, you've authored many, many books, but there's another excellent book called Murder by Injection, which deals with
the
AMA.
Of the American Medical Association.
That in itself, Eustace, is incredible that this, to this day, and it's been a while since you wrote the book, but to this day, that Murder by Injection would be the only book written about the history of the AMA. Back after the break with Eustace Mullins. All right, we're back after the break with Eustace Mullins. Now, we have, of course, a common misconception is that the Federal Reserve Bank is printing money. Of course, they never print anything. The money that is printed in the form of Federal Reserve notes is actually printed at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, and then it is, after it's printed, it is sold to the Reserve Bank for the cost of printing, which is currently about 4 cents. So the government prints up a $100 Federal Reserve note, and then under the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, they have to sell this $100 bill, this Federal Reserve note that they've just printed, to this private bank for the cost of printing, which is about 4 cents. Then it gets even more absurd because in order to pay its debts, the government must then borrow the same $100 bill it just sold for the cost of printing back. It must borrow that Federal Reserve note back at the face value of $100, and in order to borrow it back, it gets even more absurd because the government then must print up a treasury bond, which promise or bill or some other kind of debt instrument, which promises on its face to do something that's mathematically impossible. It promises to pay not only the $100 bill, which exists, but also interest, which does not exist. So, ergo, we have the foundation of this law that we're in, which is very similar to the depression cycle of the 1920s to 1930s boom and bust cycle. And in previous programs, I have proven that these cycles are inevitable, not just probable, but inevitable under our current debt money system. And I go back to your book here on page 162, and this is the Mariner Eccles, and he says, before the House Banking and Currency Committee, June 24, 1941, quote, money is created out of the right to issue credit money, unquote, which is just not even printed. That's just a bookkeeping entry out of nothing. And then it's attached in the form of a debt is attached in the form of interest, meaning that from the moment the money is created as a bookkeeping entry, the repayment of that debt is not possible because the principal plus the interest is greater than the principal is issued into circulation. Now, going back to your here on page 162, he says, of turning over the government's credit to private bankers of 1913 gave them unlimited opportunities to create money. Federal Reserve System could also destroy money, and this is how depressions are created. I want my listeners to pay close attention to this, because this is how the international bankers create depressions, and it's right in Eustace's book. But to private bankers, quantities through open market operations, Eccles said at the silver hearings of 1939, quote, when you sell bonds on the open market, you extinguish reserves, unquote. Extinguishing reserves means wiping out a basis for money and credit issue. I'm reading right from page 162. Extinguishing reserves means wiping out a basis for money and credit issue or tightening up on money and credit, a condition which is usually even more favorable to bankers than the creation of money. Calling in or destroying money gives the banker immediate and unlimited control of the financial situation, since he is the only housing shortage. The money panics of 1873, 1893, 1920 to 21, and 1929 to 31 were characterized by a drawing in of the circulating medium. In other words, a contraction in the volume of the money supply. In economics, this does not sound like such a terrible thing, but when it means that people do not have money to pay their rent or buy food, and when it means that an employer has to lay off three-quarters of his help because he cannot borrow the money to pay them, the enormous guilt of the bankers and the long record of suffering and misery for which they are responsible would suggest that no punishment might be too severe for their crimes against their fellow men. On September 30th, 1940, Governor Eccles said, quote, if there were no debts in our money system, there would be no money, unquote. Now, this is incredible. And in tomorrow's program, Eustace, I'm going to read from Edward Pop, Dr. Pop, whom I'm sure you're familiar with, where he documents how there is, and this is the title of one of his works, there is no need for the U.S. government to incur interest-bearing debts. So your quote here of Governor Eccles, if under the current debt money system there were no debts in our money system, there would be no, is kind of like anti-gravity, is it not?
Oh, it is indeed. And creating money as a debt-bearing currency is the most profitable operation of the bankers, and no one has ever objected to it. Ezra Pound told me in the insane asylum when I met him that you've got to learn the difference between non-interest-bearing currency and interest-bearing currency. And, of course, that was Greek to me, but I did learn.
Okay, I've lost you, Eustace, on the sound. I can't hear a thing right now.
Oh, that's fine. I'm sorry, because that was very important.
Ezra Pound, of course, was the brilliant poet who found out too much about the money system, who was perfectly sane, and whom Roosevelt engineered into the insane asylum in order to try to shut him up.
Oh, yes, he appointed three government psychiatrists to say that he was incompetent.
That is similar to the Soviet tactic during the Cold War of putting political dissidents into the gulag. Ezra Pound was perfectly sane, but he just knew too much. Eustace, I really appreciate your coming onto the program with us, and would love to have you on back again. Do you have any closing comments for our listeners?
Well, we're talking about the most important thing that the American people need to know. John Adams said when he was president that the American people had no knowledge of money or credit, and that's been their drawback all these years. That's why we've had all these depressions and crashes and panics, because the American people never understood the nature of money.
And most of them still don't today.
Pardon?
And I said, and most of them still do not to this day.
Oh, not. They haven't learned a thing. And my book has been circulating for 50 years, and I've reached a lot of people, but I haven't reached enough.
Again, I would urge our listeners to get a hold of a copy or copies of The Secrets of the Federal Reserve. The subtitle is The London Connection, and I'm holding in my hands the Jekyll Island edition by Eustace Mullins, and we read to you earlier about how it's available, and I'll read that address again on how people can order your books. To order Eustace Mullins' Secrets of the Federal Reserve, the price is $40, postage paid. Christian Retirement Home, 94 Mountain Vista Drive, apartment 101, and that's Stuart's Draft, S-T-U-A-R-T, Draft, Virginia, 24477. Thank you once again. The sound is breaking up again, but thank you so much for being back on our program.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be glad to be on again sometime.
All right. We'd love to have you back. Say it once again.
All right.
Back tomorrow, and we'll be talking about the work of Dr. Pop. There is no for the U.S. government to encourage cigarettes, and he documents why and how the government can wean itself from this terrible debt money system.